All right, what is up, everyone? BYU football signing day recap here on X Spaces. Appreciate all of you hopping on board. Feel free to share it on X with all your followers and whatnot, and we can get the conversation going over here and see where this conversation takes us, as it was an eventful day for BYU football. There was so many commits. There were, you know what, I got to say, it felt like BYU football signing days of old. And I say that because, like, I haven't been a fan of the early signing period. I never have. I don't like the December period. I don't. But I like this one, though, because I thought that there was a lot of value with BYU actually not going to a bowl game this year, because I thought that there was a lot more focus on actually building the roster for 2024. I think everyone here in this space and the Cougar Nation would say that there's a lot more value to be had by piecing together a roster that's going to be more competitive in the Big 12 next year than grinding it out with 15 practices in a bowl prep for Shreveport, Louisiana. I just think there was more clarity. There was a clearer vision coming out of signing day, and that was a little bit refreshing. And I enjoyed seeing these heated recruiting battles for BYU once again. You know, I think people far too often in the social media era get caught up in, well, BYU's never been a good recruiter. They've never been able to recruit at a high level. No, that's incorrect. BYU has historically been a program that goes blow for blow with a lot of heavy hitter programs over the last four decades. Like, recruiting was a thing before the internet started, and BYU was in some real notable battles, and I think today was a little bit refreshing, I thought. I thought it was something that was a lot of fun for BYU, and I hopefully all of you enjoy the coverage from KSL Sports. I've been up since 5 a.m. or 5:30 a.m., but I got to say, like, I'm wired. I love these sort of days. It's fun to create this sort of content and talk with all of you in Cougar Nation. Feel free to interact with me here in the X space. Feel free to request in and hop in. I'll try to keep tabs of all the commentary and whatnot. I see some questions piling up. Feel free to tweet at me, whatever, and I'll try to get to those questions throughout. So let me go over some initial takeaways from this class. 60th ranked class nationally in the 24/7 Sports team rankings. That's the industry standard going to 24/7 Sports. They have the best composite ratings. They are the standard in the industry when it comes to recruiting rankings. BYU checking in at 60th. Pretty solid. Hey, not great. You still want to be, I think, in that top 40 threshold to want to say you're going to be a Big 12 title contender. You need about 2 to 3 cycles of, at a minimum, top 50. I think more top 40 to be a Big 12 title contender, but it's a step in the right direction. 10th in the Big 12 conference for BYU in this 2024 class. And keep in mind, you still got a lot of time going into February as well. But my key takeaways from this class: instant upgrade on talent. Like, last year, as BYU crawled to the finish with a 5-game losing streak for the first time since 1955, I couldn't help but think to myself that BYU just didn't have enough talent. And I was a little bit surprised because, you know, Kalani Sitake told me at Big 12 Football Media Days that it was the deepest team that he's had. Aaron Roderick was confident that they had upgraded at every position. Well, they didn't, and they regressed, and there were coaching lapses. I thought the effort was good. I thought the team was okay, like in a good mind space, but just whatever it was, the execution was poor, and it just seemed like BYU was outclassed in so many ways against Big 12 teams. I thought this recruiting class in 2024 instantly upgrades talent, and I just feel like you look across the board with some of these commits. There is each one of these guys, it's not these developmental projects where you hope in 3 years they can be something. Far too often, I've been in these X spaces, these radio shows, and I've talked to Cougar fans and said, you know, keep an eye on this guy, and, you know, 5 years after he gets back from the mission and then he takes a few years to develop. Like, I look at this class and I look to myself and think, there are so many guys that I feel like they can step in, whether it's January or it's, you know, in July or June, whatever it may be, they're going to be able to compete And that just has, that's a refreshing take too with this class. And I just love some of the talent. When you see some of these players in this class, I just feel like they step in and they could be better than what BYU already has on the roster. And that's a refreshing change. The defensive line, takeaway number two, defensive line has some future stars in the making. The push that BYU made along the defensive front was refreshing and clear as day that BYU needed a new defensive coordinator. That's why they brought in Jay Hill. They needed a new culture change with how they recruited. This coaching staff on the defensive side, their first full recruiting cycle, first recruiting cycle, and this is what they delivered. Imagine what these guys are going to deliver when they have multiple years and multiple years of data to show, you know, potential recruits of what these players can become. Like, Jay Hill, Kelly Papinga, Justin Enna, Jarrell Guilford's been a mainstay on the staff for his recruiting prowess for years now. But think about what they're going to be able to do going forward. I think that's pretty exciting for this group because these guys are relentless. Every one of these recruits, these defensive players, the common theme, Jay Hill, Kelly Papinga, they wouldn't stop texting. They wouldn't stop, you know, reaching out. Sione Buha, too. I shouldn't forget him. Defensive tackles coach. This is an aggressive recruiting staff. You know, Jay Hill, when he was at Utah, he was voted one of the recruiter of the year in the Pac-12 conference when Utah was there when he was assistant. Like, this is his bread and butter, is recruiting. I've gotten to the point where I don't necessarily buy into, I need a coach that can have all these brilliant X's and O's. Like, yes, you got to have that as a coordinator. But at the end of the day, I want a coach that can just get straight up dudes, that can come into the building and you go, that guy's a Power 5 talent. That guy's a Big 12 talent. Like, I look at these defensive linemen. Ephraim Asiata, 6'3", 210 pounds. He's got to add some weight. He played linebacker at Harriman High School. That guy's going to be a freak. And what a remarkable story he is. 1% chance to survive and live. But he's going to be an edge rusher, and he kind of has a great storyline about how he was a Ute legacy recruit. How many times have we talked about BYU legacy recruits going up to the Hill, but Ute legacy recruits going to BYU? Outside of Zach Wilson, there's not many to point to. I think that's a pretty cool storyline. Sepha Brown committed back in January on the early stages of the Jay Hill tenure. Instantly, Jay Hill gets Sepha Brown, who had options to Power Conference teams. Kenny Fonahema, who just hours ago, I was down in Springville catching up with him, watching his signing day ceremony. 6'5", 210 pounds. He acknowledged he's got to add weight. That's the key challenge for Kenny going forward if he wants to have any sort of chance to play in the short-term future for him. But that was a guy that just signed, sealed, delivered. He's going to Utah. And he even acknowledged to me that, you know, turning down Utah was pretty difficult because their track record of success at D-line, right, it speaks for itself. Like, Utah is always going to have a good D-line. You know, this isn't the space to talk about Utah, but, like, we can acknowledge that they've had a history there, and it's tough for the guys to turn down because they turn out NFL guys. But Fonahema, that's a kind of a quiet, under-the-radar in terms of things are changing a little bit in-state and maybe along the defensive line, too, that BYU is ready to contend with Utah. And I think it's also an indicator that, hey, the playing field is completely even now. There's no, hey, we're in this conference, BYU's independent. Like, yes, they're getting trucks. Yes, they got probably a little bit more robust NIL market where they're going to pay a little bit higher price tag for guys. They're willing to do that a little bit more. BYU's not getting in that game. But I just think that as far as the conference affiliation, all those sort of things, BYU's got a lot to offer players like Akini Fonahema. I really like the junior college defensive linemen that BYU added in this class. Sonny Tuala, 6'5", 260 pounds out of Citrus College. Incredibly raw prospect. Only played 1 year of college football after high school, as Jay Hill noted. But, man, freaky ability. And if this guy clicks at all, he's going to be an all-Big 12 performer. I think the sky's the limit for Sonny Tuala. I just love that size already. And you compare that up with the combination of size and speed. Tuwala's a really good one. And I also like a little bit of a junior college transfer still. I think it's a forgotten market with how colleges have just focused on the transfer portal and high school recruits even getting phased out a little bit more. I think there's still some value in the junior college scene, and getting someone like Tuwala really helps. DeVoe Tuataga, you know, this is someone that in years past, in an entire recruiting cycle, he would have been a crown jewel, but on signing day, he's kind of getting forgotten. He shouldn't. 6'6", 245 pounds, Cedar Valley High School. Like, he had Oregon, he had legit Power Conference offers, and again, he commits to Jay Hill, Kelly Papinga, this staff. Kelly Papinga suddenly has quite the embarrassment of riches a lot the edge spots. Now, they got to perform. Like, these are all names, and how many times have we talked about BYU classes looking good on paper, and then, well, they bust because these heralded defensive ends that BYU has signed in the past, they don't amount to much. But I like the volume here where it's not all on one guy. It's not all on one dude to step in and save the position. You've got five or six dudes that you're probably going to hit on at least one or two of them. And if you have that, you know, success rate where you're bringing in five to six guys a cycle, maybe it's not going to be as high in future classes, but you're bound to hit on a couple with this many guys coming into the program for BYU. Another takeaway that had come away from signing day, and all the coverage, again, you can check it out on kslsports.com. The quarterbacks are young, but they're promising. Noah Lugo from Texas, you know, he acknowledged to me he's got to work on his passing. And you hear that and you go, quarterback, he needs to work on his passing. What should I make of that? But he did take significant strides in his senior year, made a lot of leaps in that area. And he didn't really take over the starting role at his high school until, you know, his junior year. There was a decorated quarterback who ended up going D3, but he set school records, and Lugo had to wait his time until his junior year. But, you know, he's a really good athlete, and he's a guy that's going to succeed at a high level at BYU in the classroom. He's like a 5.3 GPA guy in high school. How that's even possible, I don't know. Dummies like me don't know. But Lugo's, he's got a good arm talent. I don't think he's got a cannon like a Ryder Burton. I feel like Ryder Burton, out of all the quarterbacks that BYU has right now competing, I think Ryder Burton's got the best arm out of all of them. And I kind of have a soft spot for Ryder Burton. I just feel like I kind of get the feeling, and I know he wasn't part of the 2024 class. He redshirted this past year. When I watch Ryder Burton, I get flashbacks to Zach Wilson. And I hesitate saying that sort of commentary because, you know, Zach was an all-timer at BYU. He was outstanding. But just to me, when you see flashes in a practice, like, you either got it or you don't. And when I watched Ryder Burton in practices, I was very impressed in fall camp. The small, small sample size that I saw of him getting snaps, he looked good. But, you know, I'm curious to see what Noah Lugo can do. He steps in January. And you also like the fact, too, that he's a guy that really is embracing BYU. He wants to kind of be one of those key difference makers as far as rounding out the class, bringing in guys, being a kind of a vocal guy on social media, texting. He even acknowledged that he was pushing Brooks Barr in basketball. He's a nearby Fort Worth, Texas kid, and he wanted him to come to BYU. Brooks obviously signed with BYU Hoops. You know, he wants to have all of his friends and anyone that's talented come to BYU. I always think that's kind of notable that you're just buying in and you want to be part of this thing and build it up. Enoch Watson, talking with Kalani Sitake today. I had a one-on-one with Kalani, and it was great stuff. Like, it was outstanding commentary from Kalani Sitake, getting in to the minutiae, really breaking it down at a deep level, this program. And Kalani was very candid with me. And that interview will play in its entirety coming up this Saturday on KSL News Radio. But he told me Enoch Watson, man, he's got the goods. And, you know, he's very high on Enoch and what about his potential down the road. Even Jay Hill said on X today that he was so impressed with how Enoch Watson threw the football the first time he saw him. Watson made huge strides. He was kind of one of the trendy quarterbacks in recruiting circles in the springtime. When BYU got his commitment, I think had they not got him when they did, I think this guy would have pulled in a lot more offers. Now, it's easy to say that now because it's kind of a guesswork because recruiting, it's always a unique game. It's a lot about timing. But I think Watson would have pulled down Power 5 interest, and then you pair up the production he had playing under Ty Detmer and Max Hall this year. Watson's good, and he dreamed of being a BYU man. Like, that is his dream, kind of in the same footsteps of a John Beck of yesteryear, like, dreamed of being a BYU quarterback. But, you know, they're young, but they're promising. It's not as instant impact like the D-line, but there's hope. There's potential. And it was critical because Aaron Roderick went two recruiting cycles, and it was an underrated storyline. In retrospect, that's caused the issues that the quarterback room is having right now. But they went two full cycles without a high school commit. Two full cycles. I mean, then if you could probably count three if you say Soljay Maiava, who really never had a legit crack at being a QB1, there was just a long stretch of not really adding the future guy in the building type of situation at quarterback, and both of these guys could represent that for the Cougars going forward. Another takeaway that I come away with on signing day. Welcome to an era of inviting recruiting battles again at BYU. How refreshing is that? Kalani said it today. It's easy to go for the low-hanging fruit and just go for the guys that want to be at BYU and they're raw and they're developmental and they got an offer sheet. He didn't go into this details, but that's code for the guys that have the offer sheet of Weber State, Southern Utah, and BYU. That was the low-hanging fruit because guess what? You could get those guys 99% of the time. But also understand, you will not succeed in the Big 12 if you continue to fill out a roster with that sort of personnel. That was okay in Independence when you had five or six games against the New Mexico States of the world. And I maybe shouldn't say them because they were actually a decent team this year. But I digress. Like, that was kind of the makeup. And it was like BYU had this kind of, you know, it's a different place to recruit. And I think there was a lot of coaches on the previous staffs that just felt like, you know, they're not mailing it in, but it was like there wasn't this relentless attitude where you're like, this is BYU. Like, this is a place where you have to fill the roster and have talent to compete at a high level. Like, what are you chasing here? And this staff, well, I think offense too, to a lesser degree, they didn't have as much impact in this class, but this defensive staff invited recruiting battles. Like, all these guys that BYU added down the stretch, I mean, they had Power 5 opportunities to go elsewhere. That wasn't always happening on signing days when BYU was adding a guy. There were times you see BYU add someone, you go, okay, like, that's a scholarship guy? Or they just bring him on as a scholarship because they had one available and they couldn't really get anyone else? Like, here you go. Like, okay. Like, now in the era where these scholarships being a Big 12 team, that they're going to be four-year guaranteed deals to these athletes, you got to hit it out of the park. Because, yeah, these coaches can say, hey, you know, after a year where maybe these guys are struggling and it's just not working out, you could say, if you're a coach, hey, yeah, this is, you know, you're going to be third, fourth string. That's what it is. Doesn't matter the player. The player can stay if he wants. He doesn't have to go anywhere. He's got it guaranteed that he's going to be on scholarship with this place for 4 years. So you got to make sure to get your numbers in alignment. And I think BYU has done a nice job with getting their numbers, their ducks in a row lately. There were so many classes in the past where I'd come out of signing day and I'm thinking to myself, how are these numbers going to work? I've got like 98 scholarship players written down unofficially, and you got to trim it down to 85. Like, how does this work? And, you know, now I kind of look at the numbers and there's still some wiggle room to add more pieces. They've done a nice job kind of weeding out the personnel that, you know, probably not Big 12 guys, and identifying players that, okay, maybe they haven't performed yet, but you like the potential, and they've got the makeup physically, and they've had some flashes of production. They just got to get some more game snaps. So I think they're doing a nice job with their numbers for BYU. Strong close to the class, I think, is my final takeaway. Tay Nakua, Kenny Fonohema, Ephraim Asiata, Viliami Puha, Danny Seili, Luke Tuomalatai, I'm probably botching that one, Ignacio Tupo. I think those are some studs, man. I think Tuomalatai, I really like him. I think he's an interior defensive lineman at LBCC. I think he could be an instant impact guy, maybe a second string guy, but he's going to be someone that he can be in a key third down and get a stop. You know, he stuffed the run. I mean, it's been the last 2 years. BYU can't stop the run. They added guys so they can plug the gaps and stop these huge running backs in the Big 12. Like, the Big 12 Conference, they have the gold standard in running backs in college football. Taj Brooks coming back. Ollie Gordon, Oklahoma State. There's been rumblings. What's he going to do? But as of right now, he's coming back. Like, there's good talent in this league at the running back position. You got to be able to stop the run to have any chance to succeed. And I think BYU did a nice job with that strong close to the class. And again, that's why I feel, you know, it's a shame that BYU couldn't have a chance to say, hey, send off team number one in the Big 12 with a bowl win. Yeah, it's a shame. Like, too bad they couldn't do that. But you know what? That team probably didn't deserve to go to a bowl game. And I just feel like long-term, big picture, it worked out for the best that this year's BYU team did not go bowling, because I just felt like BYU was so much more prepared and so much more ready to pounce at a moment's notice to go get these guys. Like these recruits in these classes, they come together for years. Like, it's not suddenly still this, it happens overnight in the high school recruiting game. It's still, there's still some element of relationships, and it's got to take time. It's not like transfer portal recruiting where it comes down, in some cases, to the bag. But in high school recruiting, it takes time. But I think having that strong close where everyone's antennas are up, it's hyper-focused, you got to be at your best, not having to juggle a practice, not having to worry about all that, just focusing on the future, I think really helped the staff, and they had a nice strong close to the class. They're 10th in the Big 12 Conference with this class. Average recruit rating on 24/7 Sports, 85.54. They're 60th nationally. I find the Big 12 class rankings very interesting. Number one, Texas Tech. Number two, TCU. Three, UCF. Four, Kansas. Five, Arizona State. I think a theme in that top five, look at the markets that those teams are in. The reach, the potential talent. I think those, outside of Kansas, I think four of those five could be the consistent top recruiting programs consistently. Tech is going to be a monster in recruiting as long as Joey McGuire's there. I think they're going to be the gold standard in the league when it comes to recruiting. TCU is not going to be far off. UCF, I think, is going to be big time on recruiting, and they showed it today. And then Arizona State. I mean, I still think Arizona and their reach to Southern California, there's still kind of that appeal to that school, like the party atmosphere. I think there's still some appeal to, like, high school kids for that. I found that kind of interesting. BYU at 10. Below BYU, Oklahoma State 11. Kansas State 12. Utah 13. Baylor 14. 15 Houston. 16 Colorado. Of note with Colorado, they did have a 5-star, but he didn't sign. He's committed. Jordan Seaton, offensive lineman, 1 of 6 commits for the Buffs. Colorado's interesting because they're going to get the top-end talent. They're going to get the elite of the elite, but they're not going to have the huge volume in the high school ranks. They're going to still dip into the transfer portal quite a bit. Potential impact guys in 2024, in my opinion, for BYU. Trey Alexander, cornerback for the Cougars. Now, Trey has been, I think, become kind of a fan favorite on social media, how vocal and excited he's been about being at BYU. Cougar, 6'2", 165, out of Georgia. Kelly Papinga was critical in this one. You know, Papinga was hired at BYU, and he made it clear he wanted to go recruit Georgia more, because the state of Georgia, I think, is very interesting, because I think historically people look at recruiting and say, Texas, Florida, Ohio, California, those are the big recruiting hotbeds. To me, California is not what it once was. And I just don't feel like the high school pipeline of talent in California is as good as years gone by as more families move out. What COVID did to that state, I just think it set them back for years. I think Georgia is becoming one of the true hotbeds in college football recruiting. Everyone's recruiting that area. And it helps that Kelly Papinga had some experience when he was working at Virginia in that state. And to get some early returns I think that's good. Georgia's never going to be a state where BYU's plucking five kids in a class. But if you can get one or two and start to have some success with these guys like a Trey Alexander, I think that bodes well for BYU going forward to say, like, hey, it's going to be a far travel. Like, it's a culture change. It's a different lifestyle in Provo compared to Atlanta. But, man, there's a lot to offer. And if you can have some success with Trey and some other guys down the road, I think that could be a really beneficial thing for BYU. But I think there's real opportunity at the cornerback position for Trey Alexander to step right in. You know, I'll give you my two way too early, too deep coming out of early signing day a little bit after this. But I feel like, you know, outside of Jacob Robinson, there's got to be competition. You know, I think I kind of have a rough estimate of who the other three guys are. I do think Trey Alexander's in that mix. Danny Saili, I love this kid. 6 foot, I shouldn't say kid. I mean, he's a grown man. He is a monster. And I just love a massive D tackle. 6 foot three, 355 pounds. Danny Saili out of Hutchinson Community College in Kansas. I saw him at the basketball game sitting in Portal T, and it was just almost mesmerizing how huge he was. It was like, wow, that guy looks huge in just normal, everyday clothes, and he's wearing black, which is a slimming effect. As a big guy, I understand the effect of black, and he still looked huge. Like, he is a massive human being, and the offer sheet doesn't lie. This guy had opportunities to go to many programs, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Miami, NC State, and he's coming to BYU, and what a huge get for the Cougars to get him. I think he's a starter next season. I do. I think you look at that interior of the D-line, John Nelson, Danny Saili, those are your top two guys in my humble opinion. I think tight end Reiner Swanson, the most heralded recruit in this class, four-star, tight end out of Laguna Beach, California. I think he's got a chance because the position lends itself to opportunity. And because there's a glaring need for someone to emerge. Now, Reiner is only 17 years old. He doesn't turn 18 until June. And it was interesting. I caught up with him earlier this week for a signing day, you know, conversation, get ready for signing day. And when I spoke to him, he's like, just getting ready for my guitar final exam. He's totally a beach dude. He loves the beach. His voice kind of fits his picture. But, man, he really loves being a BYU Cougar. And he made it clear, too. You know, Texas nearly swayed him. Like, they pushed hard in the summer. And it was not a foregone conclusion that he was just going to be signed, send, delivered to BYU. But once he committed, he was all in. And even when Steve Clark got let go, Reiner Swanson was not budging from his BYU commitment. I thought it was interesting, too. He told me in that interview, you can go listen to the full episode on Cougar Tracks podcast, wherever you get your podcast. He was saying that, you know, he doesn't like seeing LDS recruits go to other programs. Like, you know, he's just like, now that he's experienced BYU, he sees why go anywhere else? I just thought that was interesting commentary because I know fans say that a lot. It's interesting to hear that from a player because players tend to have a far different view than fans. You know, the rivalry, for example, that lays thick for fans. But for players, it's like, no, like, I like that guy. You know, there's a lot of mutual respect, even between the coaches. So that was kind of an interesting perspective. I mentioned him earlier. Sonny Tuala, I think he's going to be an impact guy. I think he'll find a way to appear in games this season. Weber State transfer Jack Kelly. I think this guy is going to be really good. You know, on the surface, you look and say, Weber State transfer, what's the point? Personally, I really like a transferring up prospect. I do. I like a highly productive FCS guy that's moving up to a higher level. That's the motivation behind the move. It's not to say he couldn't have got a bigger bag at some other school because he could have. I mean, he had legit Power 4 interest from other programs. He did. But that relationship with Jay Hill and the connection he formed with Kelly Papinga and this defensive staff and Justin Enna won the day, and he comes to BYU, and I think he's a starter in BYU's defense in 2024. An offensive guy that I feel could be an impact dude because there's an opportunity, quite frankly, when you look at the potential depth chart in 2024. Iki Tupo, 6'6", 290-pound, out of Palo Alto High School in California. It seems like a distant memory now, but I believe he committed last week. Again, my days are all kind of blurred. It's all kind of a blur right now, but he committed last week, and that was an underrated get. Again, that's the type of addition that in years past you probably don't get in the big, if you're not in the Big 12, you're probably left at the altar. You probably got the token BYU nudge, like, yeah, I'm LDS, like, I you know, going to get BYU the benefit of the doubt. But Iki Tupo, man, I think he's going to have a chance to play right away at offensive tackle because I don't see the depth right now on BYU's offensive line. That's going to be an area of focus for BYU heading into February and getting ready for spring ball. They've got to add some personnel along that offensive line. But as of right now, Iki Tupo, I think keep an eye on him. I just love his athleticism and his size. He is a big human. And I think he could play right away. And the fact that he's already had some high school snaps, like it's not this long gap between snaps. You know, when you get Mission guys nowadays, it's hard to picture Mission then gray shirt and go, you haven't played a down of football in 3.5 years. How can you reasonably be expected to play and contribute in the Big 12? That's not the case here with Tupo. Let me look here at the Twitter space. Sorry if I haven't been getting, if we haven't been getting much interaction here. Or let's see, we're getting some interaction. Let's see here. I'm just looking at some of the questions. Carl, you're the man, Mitch. Merry Christmas, brother. Thank you. Merry Christmas to you too, Carl. Mark Watterson, Hagans are also Ute legacy recruits that have recently come to BYU. Good pull. I'm very excited about Cody Hagan. Return missionaries. We can get into that too, the return missionaries here on this show. I love Cody Hagan. You know, I also like Cole Hagan too at quarterback. He's kind of an interesting guy, highly productive at the high school ranks. Set records at Corner Canyon before Jackson Dart showed up. But, you know, Cole Hagan, that whole family, those brothers, they love BYU. Kivo, how would this 2023 roster had done with an independent schedule? It's hard to say if players weren't as good or the competition was just so much better. That's a good question. You know, I think BYU would have probably been another 7-5, 8-4 year, but you would have felt empty as a fan because you would have been like, well, how good really are they? Isn't that the nice thing about being in the Big 12? Like, you have a real barometer of where you're at. And I think that's the biggest value to being in the Big 12, truly. Like, you got lessons learned, BYU. Like, you had to learn hard lessons. There's been so many years over the time where, you know, you were told as a fan, hey, appreciate that 8-win season. Hey, appreciate that 20-win basketball season. When you're feeling like it doesn't feel that good, and it's like anytime you play someone with a pulse that's really good on the national scale, you don't perform well, but hey, appreciate it because it's hard to come by. Like, I like this setup better where, one, you're in the power structure. But two, you also just have a clear barometer like, okay, this is where you have to climb. You're 5-7. And look, BYU always has quick turnarounds. They're not a program that's going to be down and out forever. I mean, go look over the last 50-something years of BYU since Lavelle took over in 72. The down spells of BYU football are never long. Now, granted, those were different, you know, measuring sticks, WAC, Mountain West, Independence. But I just think the BYU is better equipped, I think, to maybe be more competitive in games. I still think they could end up with a 4-win season next year. I do, just because you look at some of the dynamics of that non-conference schedule with at SMU, at Wyoming, that's not Big 12 scheduling. You don't go to get road games in non-conference. You go get a 7th home game and don't worry about playing SMU, or you buy out of the Wyoming game, you go on the road to SMU, and you go add some Conference USA scrub, pay them $3 million or whatever it needs to be, and you get a 7th home game, and you offset the cost with whatever you make at the home game. But still, so the logistics of the schedule, and we'll find out more on the schedule in early January. That's what Draper, of VP of football at the Big 12, said at the Big 12 championship. So I'll have that, like, you know, midway through January. The deadline for Big 12 football schedule has got to be in by January 31st to the TV networks. And, you know, that's when they released it last year. They could do that again. It was actually a good spot because from the news cycle perspective, there was, like, this dog days of basketball season. It was like, hey, you get a nice injection of football news in the cycle. Let's see here. Zach Hall, there were two O-line signees. We obviously need to improve on the O-line. Do you see BYU adding another starting caliber O-line in the portal? Yes, they have to. They need to. They need to add someone, and that kind of transitions into my way too early, too deep coming out of early signing day. I'll put this out on KSLSports.com. This is my way too early, too deep. Quarterback, we'll start there. Jake Retzlaff, Ryder Burton. That's the too deep to me right now for BYU. Kalani Sitake told me today that he gets the sense that they're going to add one transfer portal quarterback. And he told me that they've communicated that to the quarterbacks that are already in the building right now, that they're going to add one quarterback. Not two, one. They're going to add one transfer portal quarterback. So Jake Retzlaff probably going to have still an opportunity to compete for the starter job. I mean, I came away from last season feeling like Jake Retzlaff had disastrous turnovers. That, I mean, really historic. That Oklahoma pick, that is all-time historic momentum swing in a BYU football game. Just historic. I mean, I feel like I have looked at the history of BYU football more than most. And there are just not many plays, single plays, that just are so drastic in the result than that one. And if you take that away, do you feel better about Jake Retzlaff this offseason? Maybe. Because honestly, even though you got blown out by West Virginia, came out of Morgantown feeling like, okay, this guy's got something here. I mean, but that Oklahoma State game wasn't pretty at all. Is he the guy? I don't know. I don't feel like he's the QB1 right now from what we've seen, but you can always progress, right? Ryder Burton, I like him, but I mean, he's only 18 years old. He's going to turn 19 in August. You're going to turn over the keys to the program that needs to get back to respectability and improve the brand? We'll see. Running back, LJ Martin, starter. I think that's pretty clear. I don't think there's any debate there. Like, I don't need to hear some manufactured, hey, you got to compete, unless you add some stud transfer portal running back, which I would not be opposed to. LJ Martin's your guy. And then behind him, Miles Davis or Hinkley Rapati. Assuming Hinkley is coming back. I like Nukaluve Hilu out of Tooele. I think he's a good one. I think he's got a bright future ahead of him. Jovesa DeMooney comes back from a mission. He's already been back since May, I believe, last year. So he's had a long time. He graced this past fall. But I like LJ Martin. I think that if you're going to lose one of the two, Aiden Robbins or LJ Martin, you'd rather lose Aiden Robbins. And I know Aiden was outstanding in that Oklahoma game, and you would have loved to have seen that over the course of 12 games, because if you had that sort of level of production over the course of a season, you're probably going to be a 7-win team at least in the Big 12, right? With a running back that's, you know, showing that burst that he did against the Sooners. But to me, Martin's got 3 years. He's got the potential. He's got the upside. Retaining him was critical for BYU, and I think that's also an underrated storyline here coming out of signing day was the retention. You know, Aaron Roddick made it a point to acknowledge that, and I think it is a good one. You know, I think maybe there can be a little bit of a page taken out of the BYU basketball playbook where maybe roster retention can win the day for this program, and they can turn the corner by having a motivated group that's out to prove the doubters wrong and just having that extra year together, because last year was a massive overhaul. I mean, that was historic. The level of roster flip that was by BYU standards was historic. It just was. It wasn't a Coach Prime Colorado flip of a roster, but it was pretty epic how many new faces there were, where if you are not following it closely, the roster minutiae of BYU football, a lot of fans are probably like, who's this guy? I've never heard of him. So yeah, I think that having that continuity could definitely maybe help this BYU team. Wide receivers. Here's my top six for BYU. Chase Roberts, Darius Lassiter, Parker Kingston. That's my top three. Second three, Keelan Marion, Cody Epps, JoJo Phillips. All six played this past season. I will say, I think with that group, that I got to see more. I'm not ready to anoint anyone. I do think Chase Roberts is probably going to be the wide receiver one, but I got to see it now. Like, I was ready to anoint him last year going into the season. After Cody Epps went to the portal, I was like, don't worry about that. Chase Roberts, your number one guy. And it just never materialized. I mean, the whole offense never materialized at all. Darius Lassiter was a lot better than I expected. I thought Keelan Marion was going to be a little bit farther ahead than what I was expecting or what I actually saw in the season. Good return man, though. Cody Epps just never got right. But I like the fact that he made it clear he's coming back. At least that was out of Stillwater, and that's the indication right now. JoJo Phillips got an intriguing potential, and you saw flashes of it down the stretch. I remember in fall camp, he had some great catches from Jake Retzlaff and from Ryder Burton early in fall camp. I think JoJo Phillips is a good one, and I think he's got some definite potential to be a starting receiver. I got to see more, though, from this position group. I mean, you look at the rest of the unit. Koa Eldridge, he showed actually pretty well last spring, Koa Eldridge did. But, you know, that's a guy that he played in like 8-9 games, primarily a special teams guy. Wasn't really much of a factor. He's heading into his sophomore year. I don't know what the ceiling is on a guy like Koa Eldridge. Is he just a career backup at best? I don't know. I'm curious to see how much of a step forward he takes. Cody Hagan, as we talked about, he comes back from a mission, but it's going to be kind of early spring. Will that be enough time? That was kind of like the window when Dallin Holker came back from his mission, if you remember, during that cycle. Maybe that's enough time for Cody Hagan to make an impact. Jaron Kalama out of Wasatch. He was a good one. He was a guy that prepped in Hawaii. Then he moved to Utah and was at Wasatch High School in Heber. Tay Nakua, you know, I haven't really mentioned Tay much, but Temp View High, I mean, he's a Nakua. And it's interesting with Nakua, there were so many times after practice when there would be inclement weather or where practice would have to go in the indoor practice facility. And typically after media availabilities for BYU, I'm usually kind of one of the last people left where I'm working afterwards at the student athlete building or the IPF because I make a long drive back to Murray and I just want to get things done. So then when I get home, I don't have to open up my laptop again and start to work again. I know it's first world problems, but anyway, it does lend itself to kind of getting weird observations of things. And oftentimes in the IPF, I'd always see intramurals, one, early in like fall, which is just always so bizarre to me where I'm going, this is a Power 5 football program that's being ran off for this intramural session. Like, please speak that out loud at like Texas or Bama and see if that would fly. But anyway, I digress. But there would be times too where I'd also see some like random training session of just these random young high school kids. And a guy that I'd often see, Tay Nakua. And all the time when he was in the IPF, he's making big catches. And I'm like, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree from this kid. And yeah, but then I watch him in games at Tivview and I go, you know, the name is amazing, Nakua, right? But the you know, the production doesn't feel like it's popping much. Like, I'm not seeing that those flashes in high school ball that, I mean, Puka was generational. Like, I remember watching him at Orem. It was like, this guy is must see. I remember watching Puka at Soccer City in Draper. He was playing a little bit of pitch and catch with newly signed Zach Wilson in 2018 on a margin hooks thing. It was like, whoa, these dudes are unreal. That was when before they were anything in the football universe. But Tay Nakua, though, he had that huge breakout performance against Olympus in the state semifinals. I remember watching that on KSL Sports, and it was just like, okay. Like, this dude, he's got the juice. Like, maybe he's just a little bit late developer. He's kind of more along the lines of what Samson's high school career was. Like, Samson wasn't much to write home about coming out of high school, but he later became a stud and a guy that helped BYU take down Utah and won 10 games in 2021. Like, Samson Nakua was legit for the Cougs. And Opuka was generational, all time. But, I mean, if Tate Akua at his worst is like a Samson Akua, that's a good pickup for BYU. Tight end. Okay, this is where things get interesting, right? So the news today, Keanu Hill switching to the tight end spot. Honestly, I'm for that. I think it's an okay move because, I mean, I put down that top six at wide receiver. I'd probably still have that same top six at wide receiver even if Keanu Hill was at wide receiver. So if you want to stay at BYU and come back a sixth season and you want to have a chance to play, and if you're having issues, as Aaron Roddick put it, with keeping off weight, maybe tight end's the better spot for you. Now, is he going to start? I would not say that. I would go with Jackson Bowers as a starter because you're at that threshold where, okay, Harold did four-star. He needs to perform, and you better give him the opportunities to perform and succeed or else he'll leave. Not saying that's his thought process, but that history shows when you're a heralded four-star, you better get some real tangible playing time in the first 2 years or they're gone. Like, there's no more waiting game of, like, Lavelle's day where it's like, okay, we're going to wait for this guy till he's a junior, and he's going to play a little bit. It's like, no, let's play this guy, like, way earlier. Like, he was ready to go as a sophomore or freshman. It's time. Like, Jackson Bowers, your time is now. You got to be the star tight end for BYU in the future. Hopefully it happens. They've also got Reiner Swanson. I'd put Keanu Hill probably as that number two because outside of Jackson Bowers, I don't know what really gets me, like, amped at that tight end position. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing a transfer portal addition for that group. You know, Reiner Swanson is going to be a good one, but, you know, is it going to happen this year? Again, I already expressed my thoughts there. You bring back Ray Paulo. You bring back Mason Fakahua. You bring back Mata'ava Taase. Ethan Erickson, does he take a leap forward? Hey, you still got to also hire a tight end coach, too, by the way. Anthony Olson, Nason Coleman. You also, I'll have to double check on this one. You bring back preferred walk-on Lakana Enos. He was a old BYU player. His dad was back in the day with Kalani in the late 90s, early 2000s. So, I mean, there's guys. Noah Moyaki as well. He's a return missionary. They'll probably be back in the summer. Could be a gray shirt candidate. So that's your kind of tight end snapshot there. We'll start to burn through some of these other ones here. Got a hard out coming up at the top of the hour. Offensive line. I thought it was noteworthy that Braden Keim is officially coming back, you know, officially from the coach's mouth. Aaron Roddick talked about that. Because I think Keim's your probably starting left tackle for BYU next year to replace Kingsley Suamata'ia. You already saw the early returns with Braden Keim at left tackle against Oklahoma State in the regular season finale. My offensive line for BYU, as of right now, and again, I think this is a very thin group right now compared to standards that we've seen in the past. Here's kind of the combination of names that I would be saying are vying for a starting job. Braden Keim, Waylon Lapuaho, starters. Connor Pay, starters. Guaranteed. Then after that, Caleb Etienne, I think he's going to start again. I think Caleb, look, it was well documented. I mean, everyone posted the social media clips of Caleb struggling. It was out there. Everyone saw it. But I got to say, like, I think it's pretty cool that he's running it back one more year, and he's facing it and acknowledges that he struggled. And I hope he improves, man. I think it'd be a great story if he does. And, you know, we're not supposed to pull for anyone in this line of work, but I'm kind of pulling in a way for Caleb Etienne because it's just like I want to see that guy get the most out of what he's looking for. Okay, this is where things get interesting. And look, honestly, where Caleb Etienne probably gets interesting after the first three names I mentioned. Then you're going on potential. You're going on who could be the next thing. Okay, Jake Griffin I think is interesting. Very thin, though. But I think Jake Griffin could be a good one for BYU. He was a guy at Mesa a couple years back. I mean, he was in the, gosh, I want to say he was the 2020 cycle before the pandemic hit. And then Jake Eichhorn from Weber State. He's someone to keep an eye on. I'm very intrigued by Caden Chidester. I liked him in spring ball. I mean, he is just a big body. Like, he is huge. He dealt with, he had like a shoulder or an elbow injury during the season. He was in a sling throughout the season, but I would imagine he'd be ready. But like, I noted him earlier, Ignacio Tupo. I feel like he's someone that's going to have a chance to compete. Joe Brown's going to be on scholarship. I thought that was noteworthy, too. He's another guy that could really make a difference this season. You bring back Tyler Little, who was competing along the offensive line last year. He was injured. He was on a scooter towards the tail end of the season. I'm curious to see kind of the jumps from like a guy like Trevin Osler, Peter Falonico. Haven't heard much the first 2 years of those guys. What do they do next season? Trevin Osler was getting some run at times in fall camp and spring ball last March with the first team offensive line at guard. Osler showed some flashes. He could be one of those guys that, you know, come next September, he's starting. And you're like, where did he emerge from? So that's kind of a nugget to take away. But, again, until it's all finalized with the offensive line coach, too. I mean, T.J. Woods, the reported coach. We'll see where that direction that goes. You've also got Lingi Hevea going to be coming back. You also had, I have to confirm on this one, he was a preferred walk-on at Provo. I don't know if he went on a mission or not. Strauss Mongese. Riker Keel comes back from a mission. I'm very curious about him. He's an interesting one. But you got some other guys. Trevor Pay, Connor Pay's younger brother, comes back, preferred walk-on. Joseph Paula, what does he become? Is he with the team still? He was a massive body, 6'8", huge. Huge force as far as size. Does he amount to much? I mean, Sonny Moccasini, Sam Daw. Again, like I think the O-line is just kind of relatively thin by what I've kind of grown accustomed to with that spot. I always go long-winded with these things. I swear. My wife, I told her, I said, I'm going to be out 9 o'clock, mountain time. Going to be out. Going to be done. We'll be a breeze. 1 hour, that's way too much. Like, how can one person just talk for an hour straight about this topic? But, folks, I could just go all night. Like, we could probably go till midnight. We're just talking about BYU football hypotheticals, talking about this depth chart, talking about this roster. Sorry, I had to get a drink there. All right, let's go to the defensive side. Defensive line, I think this is your starting defensive front next year. You go into even front, four down front. Tyler Batty, Zay Banya, your defensive ends. But I put a caveat on Banya. I think he will be pushed. And even Batty, like if you're not taking the massive leaps forward, like he's an all Big 12 guy. He's coming back. Like he's going to be a face of the program type guy, but you got to be at your best because then there's potential guys behind you. They're going to keep pushing you and competition always has to happen. But Zay Banya though, you know, like he's got to be really good because there's guys behind him that are ready to pounce and ready to compete for time. I'll give him the nod right now. Batty, Banya, John Nilsson, he comes back from an injury. That was a significant loss that kind of went under the radar. When he went out in that Texas Tech game, you didn't win another game after John Nilsson was gone. Like, I'm not pointing to everything as John Nilsson was the cause of the five-game skid, but you know, John Nilsson's a good player. He's been really good the past 3 years, and I think he's a starter next year as a senior. Then David Saili, I'm really bullish on Saili. The backups, Blake Mangelson, Sonny Tuala, Luke Tumalatai. Oh, gosh, I'm struggling with that one. And then David Latu. We'll kind of figure out all that as far as that. But I like the options on the defensive line. I do. I think there's a lot of intrigue there. I mean, I still haven't even mentioned Isaiah Moa, Booty Schoonover. Like, what are those guys going to become? Like, what's the step for those guys? I really like new Latu Sellison from Weber State. He showed some real bursts off the edge in spring ball. Logan Latu is a guy that's got some experience quite a bit the past 2 years. You bring back John Taumoipenu from Snow. He's going to be part of the mix. Like, there's some good players along the defensive line. And, you know, I noted John Nilsson. You bring back Wyatt Dodd, Josh Singh, Bruce Mitchell, Dallin Johnson from Springfield. I saw him tonight. He is a grown man at 18. Like, he's been signed, sealed, a BYU man for years. I thought it was pretty cool. His dad tonight at Springville High was like, this was Dallin's dream. His dream to be a BYU Cougar. Like, Dallin Johnson committed to BYU before the Big 12 was a thing for BYU. And I just think that kind of speaks volumes, too. You know, like, there's something about adding a guy that just, that is his dream. He's fulfilling that, being a BYU Cougar. I think that's pretty cool. And he is strong as can be. He's going to be enrolling in January. Linebacker. Harrison Taggart, Siali Asara, Ace Kafusi. I mean, I don't know where you I go with starters right now. I'm just giving you some names. Harrison Taggart, Siali Acera, Jack Kelly, Isaiah Glasker, Ace Kafusi. There's some interesting options there. Sione Moa. Curious about what the timeline is on Lutai Kinikini. I think he's a later guy coming in into late summer. But I like the top end of the linebacker sheet. I'm still curious to see what Ben Bywater officially announces. I'd like to see Ben Bywater run it back one more time, but I do like the potential replacements, and you maybe give them the runway to be standout players. Hey, cornerback, we talked about it earlier. So Jacob Robinson, starter. Guaranteed he's a dude. Like, he's going to be an all-Big 12 guy potentially next year. I think he's going to get some preseason all-Big 12 hype because when you the media will say he got these interceptions, and I think he deserves it. Like, I think he legitimately deserves to be considered as an all-Big 12 preseason guy. I might put him in my preseason all-Big 12 ballot. Other options. So here's the top three options after Robinson. Marquis Collins from Weber State. He was not announced today, but he's committed to BYU. Trey Alexander, who signed today. And then Maury Bamba. Go listen to an interview I had with Maury back in November. It's a very interesting interview. Maury Bamba's path to BYU, you know, for folks that have been following recruiting for years, like, you know who Maury Bamba is. But for the casual fan that maybe wants to get to know more, like, go listen to that interview. He makes it clear that, you know, Jarnell Guilford, Jay Hill, down the stretch, like, they put out a challenge. We want you to become a starter in 2024. Like, every snap, see, I always get kind of blown away a little bit when, you know, we get limited opportunities in spring and fall camp to get windows to watch. But I'm telling you, I think every coach will tell you that those camp snaps, reps, they matter. Whether it's like the 23rd session, whatever it is, they matter. And I've always thought it's noteworthy, from the moment Jay Hill arrived, they have given opportunities for Maury Bamba to be a guy. And he started against TCU when there were some injuries, and they want Maury Bamba to be a stud. And I'm telling you, like, I think Maury Bamba has got NFL potential because of his measurables. Like, he looks like an NFL guy, but will it click? Like, there's definite miscues, both in practice and in games, that probably just said in 2023 he wasn't ready to be a two-deep guy. He's got to take a big leap forward. But, you know, they've got some options with Alexander and Collins. They also have Jaden Dunlap, who comes back. Zion Allen, Evan Johnson. Marcus McKenzie is going to compete, too, in that top four. Like, I'm not sleeping on Marcus McKenzie. I mean, Jay Hill has spoke glowingly about Marcus McKenzie, the gunner on special teams. But, I mean, I might be foolish right now to put Trey Alexander over him. But, hey, I love the competition. Maybe I'm getting caught up in the moment. Dom McKenzie, Marcus's twin brother, Therian Alexander, and Jonathan Kabea. Safety, Micah Harper, Crew Wakely. That's my starters right now. Backups, Talon Alfrey, Raider DeMooney. I probably should put Ethan Slade there. That was an oversight on my part. I should put Ethan Slade. Maybe I put him there with and replace a Raider DeMooney. I like the numbers at safety. It looks a lot better now than what it did when Micah went down in fall camp. You got Ethan Slade. You got Tanner Wall. Crew Wakely. Preston Rex. Chica. Male Tanuvasa. Raider DeMooney. Ty Burke. Cannon DeVries comes this summer. Matthias Leach. Tommy Parassus. Cole Clement from Springville. And then kicker specialist, Will Farron, going to be a starter. Landon Rico, backup. Punter, Landon Rico, or Sam Vanderhaar. That's my projected depth chart. There you go. Well, it's 9 o'clock. I'm staying true to it. Hopefully all of you enjoyed this. Let's see if there's any questions. I'll go to the questions here. Mitch, buy or sell eggnog. Emma Hey Mooley. I used to be buy. Now I'm sell. Sam Farnsworth. Mitch, the hardest working guy in Utah sports media. Thank you, Sam. I don't need any praise. I just want to work. Let's see here. Just going through these here. Ferd Turgeson. If anything, Hill is going to be a flex tight end. He won't line up on the line to block that often. Bauer will be on the line and used differently than Hill. Sure. No question. But, hey, we'll see. A lot of time. I got to say, I got a good BYU football fix today. I'm kind of ready. Like, let's go. Let's get to March, right? Let's get to spring ball. Let's get to Big 12 Media Day. Let's go. Let's get this thing going. I'm ready for BYU basketball, though. Like, I'm pumped for Big 12 basketball. Going to be at the Baylor game, UCF game coming up in January. Looking forward to that. But, man, BYU football, it's just around the corner, baby. Just around the corner. And, again, make sure to listen to my one-on-one interview with Kalani Sitake coming up this Saturday. I might upload it a little bit early on the podcast feed for Cougar Tracks, maybe just a little bit earlier. It's a really good interview. I really enjoyed my conversation with Kalani. I always enjoy those one-on-ones with Kalani because it's a different perspective. I think that it gives, I think, the listener, the fan, a different view of Kalani. Because I think in the general media, like, that's a game, man. Like, that's a game beyond the game where you don't want to lose that game too. You can lose the game on the field, then you don't want to also take a double whammy and lose the game at the mic in the post-game press conference. So when people say, why is he always saying, I'm going to go look at the film? And then when he actually says, like, hey, players aren't bought into the scheme, how could he do that? Well, what do you want? Do you want the truth or do you want do you want the same old thing? Got to go look at the film again. Anyway, Kalani was pretty good. I enjoyed that conversation. You'll have to hear that coming up. And I'll have more recap on KSLSports.com. And again, yeah, appreciate all of you. Hope you enjoyed this conversation here on X Spaces. If you missed any part of it, I'll have it up on the podcast feed, Cougar Tracks. So you can go check it out there. And there you go. I'll talk to you next time here on X Spaces. Maybe we'll do this again, maybe in February or March. I don't know when. I always say to myself, I want to do these more and more, but my voice will just fade away if I went this long. But appreciate all of you. Talk to you next time on the Cougar Tracks podcast and Cougar Sports Saturday on KSL News Radio. Talk to you then.